This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're listening to the Matt McNeil Show. I am not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in. I don't know what Matt's doing now, but he's got the day off. You know, we were, when I came in, Brett mentioned to me that we thought that I was going to be in on arraignment day again, because the last two arraignment days, Matt was gone. He missed them, and I got to sit in. But arraignment day was yesterday. I hope Matt had fun reporting on it. How did it go, Patrick?
I actually was off, too, so you'll have to check with Brett.
All right, yeah. It's the middle of summer. I feel kind of out of sorts. I'm just sitting in today and Monday. So, again, like, I'll just be getting my pace back, and then I'll be done again. So that's what happens when you're the guy who sits in for the guy, as opposed to being the guy. Some interesting things, though, about arraignment day. I don't know if people think about this even really anymore. I know, for instance, when I was running for office back, 10 years ago, my daughter and my wife were with me in all the parades and stuff. It was the summer of 2012, actually, 11 years ago now. And so people kind of knew me as, me and Heidi and Eve, my family. And then the following summer, I was done, but it was an off year. It wasn't actual election year. So I just did the parades by myself. And, of course, then everyone asked, hey, where's Heidi and Eve? And it was everyone noticed. And then, after when people started to get to know that they didn't want to be in the parades, at least on that year, people got used to me being by myself. And then the following year, Heidi and Eve joined me again, and everybody was like, hey, you guys. So when political figures or whoever it is, a public figure, I should say, isn't with their family, you don't really think about it. But what if you're having one of the biggest days of your life? Now, of course, this isn't really true for Trump anymore. He's got so many of them. But if I was being arraigned, my wife and daughter would be there with me. Where's Melania? Where's his call girl? Is he not paying her anymore? How angry is she? He wasn't even supposed to still be alive. And now he's going to be in. Where were his kids? Where's Ivanka on her? Where were his kids? Where's Ivanka on her father's, very stressful day? Where were they? He's just all by himself now. He's pushed everyone. He's pushed everyone away. That's something that's noticeable on Trump arraignment days, is that he's completely alone. And he doesn't have a cabinet, He doesn't have his buddies with him. Well, all of his buddies are co-conspirators that he's not allowed to talk to. He's just absolutely all by himself. The one thing is, it would be really too bad if he never spent any time in prison. But really, when you think about it, Trump's been in hell for years now. What kind of a life? you just hope there's a wedding downstairs that you can go crash. Otherwise, you're just kind of, meandering around. It doesn't... Being filthy rich, which I don't think he is, I don't know that he ever was, but he says he is, and he owns, you know, Mar-a-Lago, and he owns all these places and stuff. But does he enjoy any of that? So I think he's going to be found guilty. This indictment is extremely serious. And this, you know, I mean, the, if you read these indictments, and including and especially the superseding indictment from the Mar-a-Lago documents case that was issued about a week and a half ago or something like that, maybe 2 weeks ago. The story of that is just absolutely incredible. And by the way, it's completely obvious that, you know, that Trump did these things. It's completely obvious that Trump tried to obstruct justice. You know, he was told, do not destroy any of your surveillance tapes. And it's almost as though he almost forgot to destroy them. And then they said, okay, we're ordering you not to destroy. And we are the DOJ. We're the Department of Justice of the United States of Minnesota. We're ordering – or not – United States of Minnesota, United States. We're ordering you to not destroy your security surveillance tapes, or, you know, not tapes, but hard drives. And it's like, oh, yeah, I almost forgot. I got to make a call. And then the story that ensued, Waltin Nada, however you say his name, lies to everybody and says, I can't go on this trip with Trump. He goes back to Mar-a-Lago basically to erase the hard drives. But it's, you know, it's like a Keystone Cops kind of thing. Patrick, do you know Keystone Cops? Is that, I mean, I was too young for Keystone Cops. You know what Keystone Cops are?
Yes, and of course I'm much younger than you are, but it's kind of more, we use it in the context of a chaotic scene. It's not just a chaotic scene, kind of a goofy, almost laughably chaotic scene.
Yes.
When we talk about the Keystone Cops.
That is correct. I'm just trying to get a gauge on if people even know what I'm talking about, but you know what it means. So, and yeah, you're a lot younger than me, so I'm assuming everybody knows what I'm talking about. So it basically became a Keystone Cop scene there at Mar-a-Lago. You know, one guy, not of asking this one guy, saying, hey, go in and tell the IT guy to erase these tapes. So then he goes, okay. And then he goes in there and he says, hey, the boss wants us to erase these tapes. And then that guy goes, oh, I don't even know how to do that, and I don't think I'm authorized to do that. So then the other guy sneaks out, but he's on camera. He walks through the bushes to a place where he thinks nobody's going to know he's there, but the cameras saw him go through the bushes. And then he's talking to Waltin Nada, saying, hey, yeah, he doesn't know how to erase the tapes. And then they're going, well, what do we do now? Trump wants us to erase the tapes. What are we going to do? And then so then they can't get rid of the evidence. But now that same evidence is showing them trying to get rid of the evidence. It's a comedy, and it's also extremely shocking. It's how blatant the whole thing was and still is. I'm going to play a piece of sound in a little bit. Maybe I'll wait till after the break, but I just want us to remember some things again. As you know, when I do this show and when I do my podcast, I usually go back in time, and we need to be reminded of some things. But it's hard to keep it all in our heads, and that's why we need to keep doing it. It's the feces fire hose. You know, there's just so many crimes that we can't even remember them. Another thing that I always try and do is we all need to keep together on this. The arguments the other side tries to throw at us about a lot of these things. we need to remember that what they're saying is misguided at the very least, or a blatant lie at a little bit more than the least. And for one thing, you know, they keep saying that Joe Biden basically is persecuting his political enemies, his political rivals. Joe Biden's not doing any of it. It was a grand jury of Trump's peers that decided, yes, this indictment should go through. We recommend this indictment. It wasn't even Jack Smith. Jack Smith presented and oversaw the presentation of evidence to a grand jury. And then it was up to the grand jury to make the decision. Okay, we've seen all this evidence. Can we all agree here that there should be an indictment or indictments? And they all agree, yes, definitely, there should be actually in massive amounts of indictment. I mean, there's a massive amount of crimes in one indictment. But it, so if somebody says to you, oh, Biden's, you know, sicking his DOJ, he's weaponizing the DOJ, he's weaponizing his DOJ. It's not his DOJ, it's our DOJ. He's the president of the United States. The reason that the Republicans now say that it's Joe Biden's Department of Justice is because they made Trump, the Department of Justice, Trump wanted the Department of Justice to protect him. So now they're used to thinking, oh, that was Trump's Department of Justice. So this is Biden's Department of Justice. Neither of those departments of justice were either Trump's or Biden's. They're ours. They're ours. We, the people. And the grand jury is made up of us, the people, which, by the way, Donald Trump is one of. So the people in the grand jury are Donald Trump's peers. They're fellow other people in the United States, citizens of the United States. They're the ones who are bringing the indictment against Trump and these other people. They're the ones who are doing it. And all of the witnesses that were a part of presenting all of that evidence to the grand jury were all Republicans and close Trump allies. Vice President Mike Pence, Trump Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, Mike Pence aide Greg Jacob, Mike Pence aide Mark Short, White House Deputy Chief of Staff Dan Scavino, White House speechwriter Stephen Miller, Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani, Trump attorney and advisor Boris Epstein, White House counsel Pat Cipollone, Homeland Security official Ken Cuccinelli, the Cooch. Can I say that on the radio? Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe, House Speaker Newt Gingrich. All of these people testified. Nevada GOP Chairman Michael McDonald, White House aide Nick Luna, White House Personal Director John McEntee, Campaign Deputy Director Gary Michael Brown, Stop the Steal organizer Ali Alexander, Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, many fake electors from multiple states, Hope Hicks, Cassidy Hutchinson, although we think of her as not being on Trump's side, she was the direct aide. She was the person directly under Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. She worked in the Trump White House. All of the – and this list is not complete. How many people did I just name there? 25, 30? The list goes on, and none of them are Democrats. They're all Republicans, and they're all close to Trump. That's why they're witnesses to what Trump did. So it's not Democrats that are going after Trump. It's the evidence is proving that Trump needs to be indicted, and many of us think it needs to lead to convictions. He's going to have his day in court. He's going to have a fair hearing, as long as he doesn't screw it up too much. And by the way, another part of his arraignment, the judge said, do not commit any more crimes or I'm going to put you in jail until the hearing. And the hearing's not going to be for months and months. So Trump could get thrown in jail before the hearing. The judge went on to say, by the way, tampering with the jury or any one jury member is a crime. Is that, you know, the Keystone Cops, Patrick. Did you know that tampering with a jury is a crime?
That's news to me. I'm just kidding. I knew that.
Yeah, I think everybody knows that from just watching TV. I mean, you know, watch The Sopranos, which, of course, watching The Sopranos is going to forever be different now here in the United States. You could rename them, the Trumps.
Haven't you guys been watching Law and Order for – oh, wait, that's right. You don't believe in law. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, it's – they used to. They said they did. I don't – they actually didn't believe in Law and Order even years ago. That throws us down a whole bunch of trails. But we're talking about arraignment day. There are many experts that were, you know, pundits and people on TV then who were lawyers, you know, had decades of experience being a trial lawyer, either on defense or prosecution or both. And all of these, you know, people on these TV shows were saying, I've never heard a judge. I've never heard a judge say that. I've never heard a judge tell somebody that if you commit more crimes, I'm going to have to throw you in jail. So I'm going to let you go now, but don't commit more crimes. Trump, if he wasn't Trump, would be in jail. He would have been thrown in jail a couple months ago on the first federal indictment. I guess, this is the second federal. Oh, God. This is the second federal indictment. Okay, yeah, the schedule is getting thick. We'll go through that when we take when we come back from a break and a couple other things that I told you I would do. I hate it when somebody says, when we come back, I'll tell you about the blah, 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 and then they forget to do that. So I'm not forgetting. I know I'm adding another thing here, but I'm going to get to all the stuff. But we're going to take a short break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's hard to do that when the singing is going on. Can't talk over the singing. It's supposed to be music. Anyway, I didn't pick the music. And the singing, then you have to pay royalties, at least in the old days. I don't think there's any rules anymore on the radio. I try and stick to the old school rules. I was actually a DJ. I was a country DJ, if you can believe that, in the 80s. That was a time when all the new people, the young people, you know, I was 20 years old, when all the young people who just graduated Brown Institute for Broadcasting would go on the radio, they always got jobs on the country stations because the rock stations were the big stations. And then when you got, you know, 15 to 20 years of experience and you became a big shot, then you got put on a rock show. But by then you want to listen to country, except for me. I'm never going to listen to country. Not to bum you out if you're into country. I don't know. Do you think people who listen to country listen to AM 950, Patrick?
I have a very strong bet that the amount of listeners who listen to country and listen to AM 950 is very small.
Probably. If you're listening to this and you like country music, I don't want to judge you. I'm not judging you. It's okay. Just please, don't bring it around me is all I ask. I can be your friend, but not if you're listening to country music at that moment. I'll be your friend when you turn the radio off again. Anyway, I was saying that I still think of radio as it was in the 80s when there were rules. You couldn't say certain words. You couldn't you couldn't play the singing parts of a song, or else you'd have to pay royalties. There were rules before the Republicans ripped them all apart and basically killed the industry. But that's not what we're talking about. We were talking about arraignment day, and we were talking about the long list of people who provided the evidence that was shown to the grand jury so that the grand jury could decide whether an indictment is necessary. Here's another guy added to the list. Let's hear what he had to say on arraignment day on television. Here's the sound, Patrick.
President Trump said is, let's go with option D. Let's just halt. Let's just pause the voting and allow the state legislatures to take one last look and make a determination as to whether or not the elections were handled fairly.
That's the new lawyer, John Lauro, I think is how you say his name. That's how people have been saying his name anyway. John Lauro, he is the newest attorney for Donald Trump. And there he is on TV saying what he's supposed to be saying did not happen. He asked Mr. Pence to pause the voting for 10 days. That is a huge part of this crime. He pressured the vice president to stall, at the very least, the event of, authorizing the final election. He put pressure on Mr. Pence, telling him to pause the voting. And his argument in court is going to be Donald Trump didn't do anything wrong. He didn't pressure anybody to do anything wrong. Pence, after this, was on TV and he said, no, don't misunderstand this. Trump did not ask me to pause. He wasn't asking me to pause the voting. He was asking me to overthrow the election. And now this is Trump's lawyer can be added to the list of witnesses who are presenting the evidence against his client, Donald Trump. And by the way, why does this guy come off as yet another mob lawyer? You know, he's just got that New York mob lawyer kind of look and attitude and hair and tie and suit. I mean, Trump can't get lawyers. The only people he can get to be his lawyers are guys like this. The bottom of the barrel. Guys who are like, okay, I'll be your lawyer because that means I get to go on Fox News a lot. And it'll, you know, bring my brand up. It'll make me famous. And maybe Fox News will give me a job after you get thrown in the can. I can go on Fox News as the, you know, one of the losing lawyers for Trump and be a legal analyst for Fox News. Sure, I'll be your lawyer. That's their motivation for signing on to be Trump's lawyer. They're not signing on to protect Trump. They're not signing on to defend Trump against criminal charges. They're signing on because they know it'll enhance their career into being more fun. They can get to go on TV. Yeah, they're going to get kicked out of their out of their law firm because all the other lawyers have half a brain and don't want you to be in their law firm if you're going to be on TV representing Trump. Yeah, you'll get kicked out of that, but you'll get to go on TV. I mean, what we're watching unfold is just so unbelievable. And coming up, by the way, I should have warned you before we went to the break to go grab your calendar because you have a lot of things to write down. August 23rd is the first GOP presidential debate. And then 5 days later is the court date on the election conspiracy case. the first court date on this case. And then January 15th is the Iowa caucuses. March 5th is Super Tuesday. And then March 25th is the New York criminal hush money suit against Trump. Oh, by the way, also in January, next January, we're not even that far yet. I got more things for you to write in your calendar. May 20th of 2024 is the federal classified documents trial date. And there are a lot of people who are saying, including Trump's lawyers, who are begging to get TV cameras in there. By the way, on August 28th, the lawyer is going to announce a date for this case, trial for this case. July 15th through 18th at the GOP National Convention, if they can afford it. That's something we're going to talk about today. And then November 5th is Election Day. Now, I believe it's true that nobody facing federal charges should have the right to run for president. So really, we need to get these court dates and these trials done really before next summer. Theoretically, maybe even before the Republicans choose their nominee. But I have a theory on that and Mike Pence that I have said on this radio show weeks and weeks ago. That then I started to doubt, and now after yesterday, I am back thinking about that again. I think it's unfolding to be true, a prediction that I made long ago, and now I'm thinking it's true. And I'll tell you what it is when we come back from another break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. And that's how you do bumper music. I only had to talk over a guitar solo that started. But that's discernible. My talking is discernible. Anyway, I digress. You may remember I was going to make a point about the feces fire hose when we came back from the last break, and I'm going to do that now. I have not forgotten. This guy sums it up. Now, this is a guy who was in D.C. yesterday for arraignment day, and this person asked this guy a question. Now, this guy's got a hat on. It says vintage 1948. I'm assuming that must be when he was born. He seems patriotic. He said his dad was in World War II, and therefore his dad is buried in Arlington. And he came on arraignment day to visit his dad and to stand against Trump. He had a sign that said something about Trump has duped us. This video doesn't make all this clear, and it seems like maybe this guy voted for Trump in 2016. That is also not clear. But I'm going to play this piece of sound from this guy because he makes a big point about the feces fire hose. Oh, I'm going to play sound here, Patrick.
So when was the first moment when you knew you had to do something?
I would say it was the first day of his presidency when he went to the CIA and was completely disrespectful to our great heroes.
In front of the wall with the flag.
In front of the wall. I knew right then I wasn't going to sit around and watch this guy. And the sad thing was I thought, you know, he could never do anything worse than that. But for 4 years, every single day that I would wake up in the morning, he would have done something even more outrageous. Every single day. I didn't think it was possible. And the bad thing about it is you forget about the stuff he did before because he did something ridiculous and disrespectful and was a con man every single day.
Yes, that is my point. That's why I call it the feces fire hose. There's a crime that Trump is committing, and even if it's not a crime, it's something that would have before completely brought down a president's campaign or actually even threaten, you know, the president's office. He did many things like that. Like this guy said, every day. He brings up something that I had completely forgotten about. The day that Trump went in front of that sacred wall that the CIA has where they have a star for their agents that were killed in the line of duty. And he just made a mockery of the United States, of everything the country stands for. This guy still remembers it. Yeah, so it's interesting to be reminded of it. Okay, my theory that I've told you I was going to talk about when we came back from this break. So weeks ago, I said, you know, why is Mike Pence running for president? The Republican Party wants to hang him. They all said so. So why is he trying to become the Republican presidential nominee? Why did he decide to run? It's been a few months now since he announced. And I talked about this, I think it was like the week after. I was sitting in on this show, on the Matt McNeil show. About a week, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, after Mike Pence announced that he's running for president. And I thought about it and thought about it. And I thought, you know, his advisors are saying, no, you don't want to run for president. They want to kill you. They want to hang you. You can't win. And he's like, no, I want to run for president. No, you shouldn't run for – and he finally says, listen, I know things you don't know. I was the vice president. I'm the only one who was the vice president under Trump. I know things that nobody else on earth knows. I know things that he said to me on telephones that nobody else on earth knows. That's why he's turning out to be the star witness in this current case. I think if we get TV cameras in that trial, I think we're going to see Mike Pence take the stand. So Mike Pence talks his advisors. He says, listen, I know things that nobody else on earth knows. And one of those things is that Trump is not going to be in the primary. And they're like, what do you mean Trump's not going to be in the primary? He's winning the primary already. And then Pence says, but by next, say, June or July, he's not going to be in the primary anymore. What? By June or July, he's going to be the nominee. No, he's not. I'm telling you, he's not. So I'm running for president. I know things you don't know. And I think that's because – and now – and then things changed and Pence started to say, you know, this indictment is a sham on the other indictments. But he's not saying that about this indictment. On arraignment day, he was actually the toughest against Trump on this subject. He's the only one talking about this subject. Chris Christie isn't even talking about this subject. Chris Christie's insulting, you know – Trump, pointing out how stupid Trump is, saying things like, how can you not keep a casino open? How can you have a casino go bankrupt? He's talking about things like that. But Mike Pence is talking about this crime. He said, anybody who acts like they're above the Constitution should not be president. That's a very serious thing to say, and it's absolutely unbelievable that a guy who was the vice president is saying that about the president when he was vice president, his running mate in 2016, and he was the vice president to this guy. He had a chance of becoming president when Trump was impeached 2 times. And he's the only one. Vivek Ramaswamy is saying he's going to pardon Trump even though he doesn't know, he hasn't heard the trial yet. By the way, Vivek Ramaswamy wants to get rid of the 14th Amendment, which says it's the natural, or at least the naturalization part of the 14th Amendment. The naturalization part of the 14th Amendment says if you were born in the United States, you are automatically a citizen of the United States, even if your parents were not born, even if your parents are not citizens of the United States. And he wants to get rid of that. And there's another rule that if you're not, if you weren't born in the United States, you can't run for president. Also, if you're not a citizen of the United States, you can't run for president of the United States. Vivek Ramaswamy's parents were not born in the United States. They're immigrants. He was born in the United States, and the only reason he's a United States citizen is because of that Naturalization Act in the 14th Amendment of the Constitution that he wants to get rid of. He would be disallowed to run for president or be president if he had his way. What if he became president and then he and the Republicans got rid of that part of the 14th Amendment? He would be an illegal president. And he seems like the smart guy. He seems like the smartest one of them all. Yeah. I know everybody's trying to scare us into that Trump is going to be president again. He's got a really good chance of becoming president again. And if not him, then Ron DeSantis. Yeah. We're forgetting about an awful lot of things. Let's talk more about that after this break. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. And that song reminds me that when I was a country DJ in the 80s, every Saturday morning I had to go on the air at god-awful hour and play polkas and waltzes because I was on the radio down in New Prague, Minnesota. And they were really into polkas and waltzes. So we had a collection of records of these local, mostly polka bands. So I had to try and stay awake starting at sunup and play that music for 4 hours every Saturday. Wow. Anyway, I noticed that this TV behind me that has been here at the station for over a year, is finally on and it has some cool graphics going on it. But now the camera is pointed in a way that the camera can't see the TV. So it's too bad. I could describe it to you, but that would be boring. You need to see it. So I don't know. We should do something different with the camera maybe. Anyway, I just noticed that. So talking about... You've heard me before, if you've heard me on this show, talk about how we shouldn't be scared by the way people are starting to talk about the election and polling and that Trump's got a good chance of becoming president. Here's one reason. Democratic presidents since the 40s have pulled in an average of 176,000 jobs per month, whereas all of the Republican presidents since the 40s have an average of 67,000. At the end of every Republican presidency, we have some sort of huge economic problem. That happened after Nixon, after Reagan, after G.H.W. Bush, after G.W., and after Trump. And then Democrats come in and fix it. Bidenomics. 187,000 jobs were created at the end of July, with over 13 million jobs created since Biden took office, and he hasn't even finished his first four-year term yet. Inflation has fallen for 12 months in a row. Unemployment for Black and Latino workers rates dropped to a near 50-plus year low. Unemployment is, I think it went down slightly. I think it went from three, it might have went up a little bit, but it's around 3.4, 3.5, which is really, really good. Best it's been since 1969. And the Democrats are starting to talk about these things. They're getting better at talking about these things. We have to take a pause every 2 weeks to let the news of Trump being indicted and arraigned happen. And then we start talking about what we're doing again. And Gen Z, young people, 18 to 45, are paying more attention now than they have in my lifetime, which is getting to be long now. For instance, I'll tell you how old I am by saying the very first president, the president for the first 2 weeks of my life was John F. Kennedy. Too bad that got cut short. But so the other thing is, like I said, on the other side, Vivek Ramaswamy is the smart guy. And if he had his way, he would be disqualified from being the president and or running to be the president. Because that's how dumb he is. But he's the smart guy. In Florida, it's looking like philosophy is going to be disallowed to be taught in colleges or high schools. Because psychology, sometimes it deals with, you know, LGBTQ matters. So because of Ron DeSantis, it's looking like if you're a psychology professor or psychology teacher, you're not going to work in Florida. Florida, you can't get homeowners insurance in Florida pretty much from anybody. A lot of construction workers have left the state because they're afraid DeSantis is going to arrest them. DeSantis is the governor of that state. He's completely derelict of his duties at the moment. He had to change a Florida law just so he could even run to be president, because Florida law does not allow you to run to be president if you're their governor, because they want you to do your job. He's not doing his job. Florida's falling apart. A breakout of leprosy is going on in Florida. Talk about biblical. Malaria and leprosy has broken out in Florida. And the Republicans think that he was going to save them from Trump. Republicans think he's their guy? And he obviously hates people. I mean, all of the scenes that have erupted about DeSantis and how weird he is. And Trump is not beating Biden. He keeps saying, I'm beating Biden by a lot in the polls. He's not. And the polls aren't accurate anymore because of Gen Z. Gen Z doesn't answer their phones. Gen Z is not a part of these polls. Again, another special election last night in Tennessee where Gen Z turned out overwhelmingly. Overwhelmingly, these guys won their elections. In the middle of summer, Gen Z is not a part of the polls. That's why the polls have been wrong ever since Trump has become a name, because Gen Z has woken up. They're showing up in ways that everybody's flabbergasted by, because that's not what the polls said. The polls said the Republicans were supposed to have a red tsunami in 2022, and it was more like a blue tsunami to outdo the red tsunami. Anyway, as you can tell, I could go on and on about why we should not worry about Trump being president again. We do all have to vote. We can't sit on our hands. But Trump is not going to be president again. That's it for this hour. I'm going to be back in a few minutes for the second hour of the Matt McNeil Show. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We'll be back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show for this Friday, August 4th, 2023, in the time and space continuum. I'm going to do something that I never thought I would do on this radio station or really anywhere else or even just by myself. I'm going to read from the National Review, a very far right-wing conservative publication. And an old, you know, conservative, I think it started in the 50s, 1950s. Anyway, so I'm going to skip down a little bit here. So everybody's talking about the primary and everybody's talking about the Republicans and who they're going to put up as their presidential contender. But under the radar, in at least a quartet of key states, the state Republican parties are collapsing. So let's talk a little bit more about how the Republican Party is not going to be able to win a state race here in Minnesota and how they're going to have a lot of trouble running in a lot of places in the country and how they're going to – how they're going to try and keep the House. They're not going to be able to keep the House. They're not going to win back the Senate. I know there are more Democratic seats up than Republican seats in the Senate, but yeah, these Republican state parties are going broke. And one of the stars in this story is Minnesota. I am going to interrupt myself to take a call. Somebody's calling in, Melanie from Minneapolis. Hi, Melanie.
So I'm really glad you gave me more information about the man, and I don't mean this in a racist way, but the man with the long, typically...
Vivek Ramaswamy?
Yes. Whenever I hear Swami, I start to laugh because I do yoga, and
yeah.
So many of them are frauds, but... say his name again, please.
Ramaswamy, Vivek Ramaswamy. And if you're getting at the fact that how does he expect the Republican Party to accept him because he's not a white, you know, old man? It's
okay.
Yeah, is that the point you're going to make?
Well, no. I heard a big interview on David Pakman.
Yeah, of him.
So
yes.
I'm a little bit familiar with the guy now. And one of David Pakman's snarky followers, because that's David Pakman's cult, the cult of snark, of course, which is most of the time delicious. So someone called in and said, wow, I have never heard anyone say so many words and say so little about what Ramaswamy.
Yeah, you got it right.
And so you just really you were describing his policy about nativism, birth.
Yeah.
And so I was just following the logic, like, well, that would mean that Ramaswamy's parents were born here.
Yeah.
I was just like, and then you're like, and guess what? They weren't.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking, like, well, okay, I already don't like this guy. Because I heard a long interview, as I say, on David Pakman. But so I'm like, oh, so what is the political sin he's doing? And I came up with an expression, pull up the ladder behind me, itis. But then the next moment you revealed, no, it's even worse than that.
It is.
And so I came up with a game. The game is, am I stupid?
Yeah.
Or am I cynical about your stupidity?
Right. Good point. Good point.
So which is this guy? Is he stupid or is he cynical about our stupidity.
Yeah, that's a good point because that.
And I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. What's the answer?
I kind of think it's the latter. He doesn't seem dumb. I think he.
No, no. He
I think he thinks
he,
that.
You know, he cobbles those words together like a.
Yeah.
A speed freak.
Yeah. Well, and like what Trump said. Years ago, he said, if I ever do run for president, it'll be as a Republican because they're the dumb ones. They're the only ones I can fool. You know?
Oh, my God, did he? How many years ago, roughly, do you think he said that?
I think he might have said that like 20 years ago or something like
sure.
that. But because people were bugging him to run, you know, like some of his people were asking when he was going to run, starting like more than 20 years ago. But
oh, okay.
But yeah, I could see this Ramos because, you know, he's a young guy. Why? What interest does he have in conservatism, really? I mean, he's apparently like he is supposed to be like a libertarian. And of course, he's rich, so I can maybe see that.
Do you know how he made his money?
I think it, like hedge fund kind of stuff.
Oh, how likable he suddenly becomes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, he just seems like a guy who, hey, I can – he doesn't care how he makes a lot of money. He doesn't care how he gets attention. And it's the same thing that, you know, other Republicans have done. It's what Trump did. Trump doesn't care about conservatism. He's never been a conservative. And now, you know, he's the leader
Would you say that he is a stereotypic bad boy billionaire?
I don't even think he's a billionaire, but I think he's – You know, he didn't ever do anything. At least Ramaswamy did, you know, earn his money, whether you like the way he earned his money or not. Trump never earned a penny. He's been doing nothing but losing other people's money for his whole life. So he's that guy.
I'm going to let you go, but I have to say something that I say often these days. God's mills grind exceedingly slowly, but exceedingly thoroughly.
Yes, and I think we're seeing that now. And
I know. It's a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is.
And
it,
the other way to say it is karma's a B word. That's the other way to say that.
You can say that on the radio. All right. Well, thanks a lot for your call, Melanie. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And I'm going to let you go. Like you said you were going to let me go. And you can't let me go because I'm letting you go. But anyway. I'm the boss of this radio show, Melanie, all right? So, anyway. I was beginning to talk about the whole Vivek Ramaswamy thing. You know, that there are some people of color and one woman who's running in the on the Republican side, and I just don't think that today's Republican Party is going – or yesterday's Republican Party either – is going to accept any of that. They're not going to accept a person of color and or a woman. And so, you know, this Vivek Ramaswamy, maybe he's thinking Trump because he's not going to have a chance. And I am going to talk about the collapsing state Republican parties here in a couple minutes, but I just want to finish these thoughts. Vivek Ramaswamy, I would think maybe he's thinking Trump, if Trump becomes president, then Ramaswamy can be his vice president. I think a lot of these people are running to be Trump's vice president. Even Nikki Haley now, I think, has disqualified herself from being Trump's vice president because she has not she has not been doing a certain favor for Trump enough as much as the other people. So I think Trump is like, nope, she's gone. She's out. She's out. She's got to be nicer to me. Got to be nice to me. And she's not nice enough. Chris Christie, I think, is running just to kind of point out to America that Trump should not be president. And that's great. I still don't like Chris Christie. I think he's done horrible things as well. But, you know, I think it's great that he's doing that. Rick Scott, I don't know what he's thinking. Maybe he thinks he can be Trump's vice president. But he just is not looking. Now, in personal life, I'm not going to call people an idiot. You know, I'm not going to say he's an idiot with his family or an idiot with what he does for a living or with his money or, you know, anything like that. But man, at running as a candidate for president, Rick Scott is an idiot. He's looking like an idiot. So is DeSantis. Ramaswamy's not looking like an idiot. And the fact that he's being so strong, probably the strongest of any of them, in that he will pardon Trump, I think he's smart enough to be careful and on task enough that he's going to blow enough smoke toward Trump to have Trump be able to accept him in the end as vice president. And I don't think any of those people of color or a woman, will be accepted by the Republican Party as the Republican nominee. I just don't think they're ever going to accept that. And it's really hard to think about what the motivations of some of these people are. Ramaswamy started to go up in the polls, but then he started to come back down. So, you know, it's not looking good for him either. DeSantis is tanking hard. You've probably heard a lot about that. But it's pretty unbelievable stuff. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about these collapsing state parties, including here in Minnesota. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. That's that sad song. It's hard to stay, upbeat with that particular piece of bumper music.
Well, we are going to be mourning the difficulties of some Republican parties in this segment at the state level, so I thought maybe that was appropriate.
Ah, good thinking, yeah. We're playing that song for the Minnesota GOP. So I'm going to talk about that sad story right now. Although, everybody's, even in our last segment here on the show, we got distracted again by the presidential run of the Republican Party. But the state parties are collapsing, some very important ones, and probably more than what we're going to talk about here, going broke and devolving into infighting. Even worse for the GOP, these aren't just any states. Arizona, Colorado, Michigan, and Minnesota all rank as either key swing states or once purple states that would be tantalizing targets in a good year. I disagree with that. I don't think the Republicans are going to be able to keep Colorado anymore at all, or Michigan, or Minnesota. And Minnesota, I don't know that it's been a swing state for an awful long time. But I could see the Republicans thinking that Minnesota's a target. That's what they thought this last time. They were wrong. But meanwhile, the Georgia State Republican Party is spending a small fortune on the legal fees of those alternate Republican electors from the 2020 presidential election. If Republicans are disappointed with the results of the 2024 elections for the fourth straight cycle, mind you, a key factor will be the replacement of competent, boring, regular state party officials with quite exciting, blustering nut jobs who have little or no interest in the basics of successfully managing a state party or the basic blocking and tackling involved in helping GOP candidates win elections. I'm reading this from the National Review, a very conservative publication. And that last bit there was actually, I believe, Rachel Maddow did a segment on this on Monday. Crumbling state Republican parties. When a political party adopts a mindset that prioritizes loyalty to a particular figure, in this case Donald Trump, over all other traits, eventually it tends to run low on those other traits. We see the consequences of this mentality in the condition of several state Republican parties. In Arizona, the Arizona Republican Party picked a bad time to run out of money. There are two competitive House seats on the line as Republicans are looking to defend their slim majority in the lower chamber next year. Not to mention Arizona is going to be a major swing state in the 2024 presidential election. Biden won this last time. But the state GOP has just over $23,000 in cash on hand. And its federal account, according to federal filings, and roughly $144,000, according to their second quarter state filing. What pales in comparison to state parties in places like Wisconsin and Ohio, where both had more than $1 million in cash on hand at the end of the most recent quarter. And, yeah, $1 million. Yeah, that's pretty good. That's good. That's a good amount for a state party to have. In Colorado, the wake of the vote in Congress to raise the debt ceiling, In the wake of the vote in Congress to raise the debt ceiling, State Republican Chair Dave Williams delivered a strident attack on all Republicans who voted for the measure, and specifically his former primary opponent, Republican U.S. Representative Doug Lamborn. He lost to Lamborn last year by 18 points. In a blast email, the state party chair basically called Lamborn a liar and a hypocrite and said Colorado Republicans are fed up with say-anything politicians like Doug Lamborn. This is not only wildly inappropriate for a party chair, but seems utterly unmoored from any serious strategy to build a robust statewide election-winning organization. In fact, he included a plea for donations at the end of the anti-GOP email by touting his efforts to put the Democrats on defense. So this is another big part of it, is they're fighting amongst themselves. They're not even targeting Democrats anymore. They're spending all their time and money going after each other. Another thing in Colorado, stolen election conspiracist Dave Williams, who's the chair of the state party, the new state chairman, has announced the Colorado Republican State Central Committee will vote on August 5th, tomorrow, on whether to cancel the 2024 Republican primary election. And to accomplish this act of political suicide, they want to make a change in the committee's voting rules that would make the old Soviet Politburo proud. I don't know what that means. Again, the writing in the National Review. I think this writer thinks that they're a good writer, but okay, they go on to kind of, I don't know what they're talking about here. Voters passed Proposition 108 in 2016, which allows unaffiliated voters to vote in the primary election of their choice. Okay, that's what they want to get rid of. Unaffiliated voters receive both parties' primary ballots. In the mail, they can choose one. Voting in both primaries nullifies both ballots. It just means a Democrat can go vote in a Republican primary, which, of course, this year would be a thing because there's not going to probably be a Democratic primary, probably in any state. In Minnesota, recent filings with the Federal Election Commission reveal that Minnesota's Republican Party is financially struggling. Okay, that's an understatement. They had a little less than $54 cash on hand. And then they have more than $335,000 in debt. A very important thing that a state party has to do, by the way, I'm not reading now, is to have their conventions, because that's where all the delegates vote for, you know, who they're going to run for their gubernatorial candidate, their, you know, all the statewide entities are all taken care of at the state convention. And the smaller conventions then pick their, you know, who's going to be the candidate for the state House of Representatives and the state Senate. The statewide convention chooses who's going to run for the national Senate. You know, Amy Klobuchar is running. She's up. Her seat is up. So the Republicans are going to have to figure out a way to not only be able to afford their convention, but in that convention then to pick a candidate who's going to have to know that the Minnesota Republican Party has no money to help them. That's another thing the state party does, is then supports their statewide candidates, either, you know, by money-wise or getting people to door knock, you know, getting to run the campaign, to run the campaign at all. Nobody wants to give money to the Republican Party anymore. We got a letter at my house from Dave Hahn, who's the minority leader in the Senate of Minnesota. Is that what he is? I can't even remember anymore.
David Hahn, he's the leader of the state Republican
Party. Yeah, right. He's the state chairman of the Republican Party now. A lot of turnover. He sent a letter to us, my house, trying to raise money. And it was very poorly written, and it was just absolutely ridiculous. I read it on the air here when we first got it, when I was sitting in for Matt the last time. And it's pretty unbelievable, the things they say about the DFL. Dave Hahn, definitely not the sharpest bulb in the drawer. They still owe $20,000 to the Mayo Center. It's the big kind of stadium in Rochester where they had their state convention last year. They still owe $20 from last year. So their convention, you know, if I had anything to do with the ownership of where they want to have their convention in 2024, I would be, well, you got to pay up front. And they can't, because they have $54. You know, then they could say, well, can we rent the whole place for, you know, from Thursday to Sunday for $54? And then I would have to say, no, that's not quite enough. So there is a more recent article in the Star Tribune, but it's not very promising if you're a Republican reading this. I'll read a little bit of that. The Republican Party in Minnesota was in rough financial shape earlier, halfway through. There was $54, $336,000 in debt. The low cash balance raised eyebrows and alarm among state GOP activists who feared the party wasn't rebounding from being swept by Democrats in last year's election. But the party's top leader says fundraising has picked up now that Republicans can point to the results of the recent legislative session and make the argument that Democrats overreached. A financial report filed with the Federal Election Commission on Thursday, which this is from July 23rd. So this is about what's that, 2 weeks ago? It showed that the GOP had close to 200,000 now, and its federal campaign account at the end of June, along with about 361,000 in debt. So they're still in debt. David Hahn, who we just mentioned, Minnesota GOP chair, said it has improved markedly since people have looked at the results of the last legislative session. Yeah. The DFL party has $781,000 in its federal campaign and no debt. And their fundraising is doing very well because of this last session, where David Hahn even says the DFL overperformed. He says overreached, but really most of the state thinks that they overperformed.
There was someone on Twitter I saw who did some digging, and actually a lot of this money that, at least according to this person, that just came into the MNGOP's account was from Kevin McCarthy's political action committee. So
yeah, makes
it's
sense.
Not like they're, you know, I think, you know, the Republicans in the state are trying to say, see, people are just begging for us to save them. They're rushing us money. They want the madness to stop. You know, they're trusting us. They're begging us to take control back and stop the madness. They've seen enough. And I'm pretty sure that's not happening.
Right. Yeah. That would mean a grassroots kind of movement of people giving, you know, 5 and 10 and 20 and maybe $50. Whereas that makes a lot more sense that, you know, an outside party just all of a sudden gave them. And I could see that happening. Kevin McCarthy's pack going, hey, is this true? Does Minnesota only have $54? Okay, we got to funnel some money in there right away. You know, I could see that happening. Where, you know, you can't confirm that that's true, but you saw that somewhere.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. You know, we're not confirming that that is true, but it makes a lot more sense than. But even if it was a grassroots effort where people are giving the Minnesota Republican Party, you know, $5, $10, $15, $50. A lot more Democrats, a lot more people are giving the DFL that kind of money. And the DFL has more money now, I think, than they've had since their inception. And I at this point in an election cycle, I should point that out, at this point in an election cycle. And so a lot of that is because people in Minnesota, nationally, Minnesota is now the fifth best place to run a business. And it consistently stays up there. And it's because the quality of living is so high in Minnesota as well. People who run businesses want to live in Minnesota. And, I mean, we've been seeing a bunch of national attention going toward Minnesota because of this last DFL-led session, which was so highly successful in giving Minnesotans things that they have wanted for a long time that the Republicans have been blocking. All right. There's more news about other states. I don't even know if we're going to go into that. I mostly wanted to talk about the Minnesota part of that. I don't even know what we're going to – I'm going to make no promises about what I'm going to talk about. When we come back from this break, you're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson on the drums and sitting in the chair for Matt McNeil. On the Matt McNeil Show, Patrick was playing the guitar on that song. So this just in, actually a week ago, the White Earth Nation Tribal Council voted last Friday to legalize recreational marijuana, and they were going to work on selling it this week. And also this week, Minnesota tribe makes history with state's first legal marijuana sale. So the Native Americans get an upper hand here in Minnesota on the legalizing marijuana. In the Red Lake tribe, the first legal sale of recreational marijuana in Minnesota was made on the Red Lake Reservation on Tuesday to a tribal employee before a throng of journalists and tribal leaders. Charles Goodwin, a Red Lake Band member and employee of the tribal dispensary, he must be the recipient. And this very interesting story here. Minnesota implements new Native American history requirement. I'm getting all of these stories off of the Minnesota Reformer, one of the best journalistic sources, I think, in the United States, certainly here in Minnesota. Except my computer froze here. So, okay, there we go. Minnesota teachers renewing their license must now undergo training about Native American history and culture. The legislature passed a law this year requiring training for K through 12 teachers about the cultural heritage and contemporary contributions of American Indians, with particular emphasis on Minnesota tribal nations, in order to renew their license. The requirement goes into effect for less experienced teachers Tuesday and the remainder of the teaching corps on January 1st. Teachers already must fulfill multiple requirements to renew their licenses, including training on suicide prevention and reading preparation. We want our teachers to know how to handle things. But I am just very delighted about this. Reading more from the article, in addition, they're required to undergo cultural competency training, which includes instruction on how to best serve Native American students. to renew their licenses. But Native American-specific training will eventually be its own requirement. The Minnesota Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board is working on the Native American history rollout and exactly what the training will include. Until then, teachers can fulfill a new requirement under the existing culture competency training. Given the rich history of American Indians and their contemporary contributions, more time and resources should be provided to Minnesota educators, says Governor Walz. Education Minnesota, the state's teachers union, said in a statement that it supports the new training requirement, but noted it adds an additional burden for teachers. Yeah, but I think this is an important thing. 20 years ago or so, I was awakened to by educating myself on Native American history and culture. And it started with a book that if you were interested in this, in doing the same, educating yourself on Native American history and culture, a good book to start with, because it kind of is a good way to ease the white people into understanding this thoroughly. Because of the way it's written. It was written, I think, in 1938, I think it was released, and it's based on interviews of a Lakota Native American named Black Elk. I think it's interviews with Black Elk. I should look it up here. And after I read that book, I just bought tons more books, and I read I just got kind of obsessed with Native American culture and history, and especially here in Minnesota. Black Elk, he was a young boy on the greasy grass when the what's his name? Custard happened, that whole incident. Black Elk Speaks, that's what it's called. Black Elk Speaks. And he tells the story of that day. He wasn't in the skirmish because he was a young boy, but he remembers the army coming to their camp and then what happened in their camp, you know, how they very quickly got organized and went and just absolutely kicked the ass of the American army out there on the greasy grass. So a lot of it takes place in South Dakota, and even parts of Minnesota. But there are so many very interesting stories, and learning about the history is really interesting, but mostly the culture. I just think it would be so good. Our society would be so much better if we would learn, if everybody learned about Native American culture, because they had it together better than the European culture did. And it's really too bad that the Europeans came over here and tried to wipe them out, did kind of wipe out their culture. And there are a few people still keeping it alive. And here in Minnesota, we have the first Native American to ever hold the lieutenant governor seat, Peggy Flanagan, who's an incredible person. I know her well from back when I was more involved with the DFL and ran as a candidate. She actually trained me on being a candidate back 10, 11, 12 years ago. And she's a Native American woman, not only a Native American, but also Native American woman, first in the history of the United States to be a lieutenant governor. And anyway, time to take another break. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. Hey. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. Happy birthday to Barack Obama. Remember when he was president? Wow. It was a whole different world. Proof that there are parallel universes, and we made a shift on that night in November in 2016. We went from a tolerable world to a crazy, chaotic world. And now we're working on crossing to an even better third parallel universe. So meditate as much as possible. All of us, we need to finish this shift. You can feel us shifting. One thing, Trump Republican allies in Congress, you know, if you remember, went along with the effort, effort on January 6th. After the rioters had been cleared from the halls of the Capitol, they voted to toss out the certified election results in several states. Even if unwittingly so, members of Congress who voted against certification were set to play an important role in Trump's scheme, which prosecutors allege was an illegal attempt at usurpation of power. If neither candidate received the necessary 270 electoral votes, the election would have been thrown into the U.S. House, where Trump hoped to win the support of the majority of the 50 delegates and take the election. Ted Cruz was a part of that. I'm going to mention somebody else who was a part of that. Several scholars of American politics have christened that group of lawmakers the Sedition Caucus. That caucus counts only one current Minnesota lawmaker as a member, U.S. Representative Michelle Fischbach of the 7th District. But on the week of Trump's arrest and indictment on federal conspiracy charges, if Fischbach has any regrets about supporting those efforts, she's kept them to herself. Is she regretting being a part of the Sedition Caucus? She regretting being a part of Trump's scheme, which was illegal? Fischbach has not issued a public statement on the latest Trump indictment. She did not reply to the Minnesota Reformer, where, again, I'm going for this information, inquiries to her communications director, her D.C. office, or her congressional website and Twitter direct messaging. They're trying to get at her, and she's running away. She repeated numerous falsehoods after winning her election in 2020 about the election. In a November 2020 Fox News appearance, Fischbach made a baseless claim that Democrats did not win the votes of the American people. They are just finding votes at this point. And in reality, they were still counting the votes. They weren't finding them. They were still counting them. And Joe Biden ended up winning by 7 million votes. That's a lot. That's a landslide. I think he got 307 of electoral, and Trump got something like 230 or something. That's a big margin, both the electoral college and the popular vote. So that's another thing, talking about, you know, trying to remind you that Trump is not going to be president. Mike Pence thinks that. Mike Pence, I think, thinks that Trump isn't even going to be the nominee. And Mike Pence, you know, who knows who would break through at that point. I think by next summer, DeSantis is going to be gone as well. So who's going to take over? Like I said, you can't be a person of color or a woman. So I could see Mike Pence thinking he's got a path. I could see him thinking that. And the way he acted yesterday was actually the best I've seen him. I don't think he can win a general election because he's crazy and he's got no personality and he is cringy to watch speak. And then here's another thing I remind you of. Now, I'm just going through how so many people, how are they going to talk about this new indictment? I don't think we quite know yet because they're not being super vocal about it. Michelle Fischbach is running away from any microphone or email or any contact trying to be made, trying to ask her about what she thinks of this new indictment. So They don't know what to do yet. I don't think they have their memos written yet. I don't think they have their overall plan. And Mike Pence is using it as an off-ramp, finally. What about Kevin McCarthy? What's he going to do? Here's another thing. The GOP is split right now, and a lot of them in the House want to shut the government down. They want to shut the government down this fall, which I would be especially pissed at because I'm going to D.C. with some friends. Heidi and I are going with some good friends of ours to, you know, to see the different museums and stuff like that. And we don't want everything to be closed when we get to D.C. at the end of September. I don't think the shutdown would happen until October, but I'm not sure. Anyway, the Republicans want to shut down the government. If they do that, and even if they don't do it, they're going to be talking about it. And the Democrats are going to use that in the election. Republicans want to shut the government down. Republicans have a criminal as their candidate right now. How are they going to talk about all that? And I, again, remind you of Gen Z is voting. They are voting. And they are voting, you know, obviously like at somewhere in the 90s for Democrats. And one of the biggest reasons is, so pretend that the Republicans have an incredibly good nominee. So they have an incredibly good candidate running by next summer, like say late in the summer, say this time next year, they have a really, really good candidate. That candidate is going to be asked, what about a national abortion ban? And if that candidate says, I'm not for it, they lose all Republican votes. And if they say, I am for it, then they bury themselves and bring even more of a turnout of Gen Z and Democrats. And they lose by an even bigger margin in the general election. That's just the reality of it. That issue alone ensures that there will be no Republican in the White House in 2025. And they're going to have to go off into the woods for a couple decades before they're going to have any chance of winning under the name Republican. It's just, don't forget about that. That issue is going to be loud by this time next year, and it's going to be loud all the way into Election Day. And it's going to ensure that Democrats, I believe, are going to widen their majority in the Senate. I believe they're going to take back the House. And they're going to resoundingly win back the, or not win back, but keep the White House as well. Probably under Joe Biden. I mean, yeah, I think under Joe Biden. But anyway, yeah, that's it for today. I'm going to be back on Monday. This has been the Matt McNeil Show. Todd Mickelson sitting in. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We'll see you on Monday.